Hello, this is Kelly Woods, soul doula and founder of My Authentic Life. No matter what wrong turns you believe you've taken, the present moment offers a fresh start. Enjoy getting back on track with Aubrey Johnson and the Road to Rediscovery podcast.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. If you wish to connect with The Road to Rediscovery beyond the weekly episodes, I want to personally invite you to follow our Road to Rediscovery Facebook page. We are a collective positive vibe of 815 followers strong and counting, chock full of thought-provoking, inspirational quotes. There's posts of positivity, solo and guest video shorts, and a lot more. There's something for everyone on this page who are seeking motivation and inspiration. Just search for the page R2R podcast while you're on Facebook, select it, then click follow. And while you're there, if you feel you would recommend this podcast to someone, please click the reviews link and share your thoughts of the show. Again, the name for that search is R, the number 2R, and podcast. And as always, thank you so much for your listenership. All right. My special guest is a sales leader at Microsoft who previously worked at Google and is now a renowned author and speaker on trauma and transformation. 7 years ago, she was crossing the street towards her husband's car when another car struck her not once, but three times to the point where she was trapped under the car. Amazingly, she survived and now uses her story, her experience to inspire others. She shares her journey through public speaking and in her book, The Unexpected Benefits of Being Run Over. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a warm welcome for Nassim Rochette. Nassim, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
It's so great to be here. Thank you, Aubrey. And the road to rediscovery is almost perfect because my journey is about a road.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the name is fitting as well. I mean, there's some things I'm sure that we'll unpack here that you will share insights in your rediscovery, from that traumatic event, you know, and we're going to unpack some of these. And to open us up, Nassim, if you don't mind, I hate to ask this, but I just have to know, being a spouse myself, okay, I just have to know, as you were walking towards your husband's car, was your husband there witnessing all this happening to his wife?
He did. I was in a pedestrian crosswalk crossing the street to my husband, who's picking me up after a day of work. Mm-hmm. And a car turned, started coming towards me. I yelled, and you know, he looked up from his phone because he was parked, mm-hmm. and saw the car hit me. And then saw the car drive forward over me, reverse over me, and then drive over me a third time. So he watched the whole thing, and I could hear his cries.
Yeah.
Kept me alive, but also as I heard him, I knew he was watching me die.
Oh, my Lord. My goodness. I can't begin to fathom, you know, and forgive me, but I'm old school. And, you know, to have and to hold in sickness and in health, and the role of a husband to protect, and in most cases to be willing to put his life on the line for his wife, his children. Again, that's just how I was raised, and to have that role and to be passionate about what that role means while seeing this unfold before, you know, my eyes as a husband. It's absolutely heartbreaking, powerless, helpless. I mean, because all this is happening, I'm so very sorry that I mean, the way this has unfolded like this, Nassim, did you feel at one point, or did your husband feel at one point that, I don't know, maybe because, I don't know, to me, just the maliciousness of it, three times, was there some intent or targeting?
It's interesting, you know, Aubrey, because there wasn't a hit. I joke, you know, my husband wasn't out on me. It was a lot of bad judgment in the moment.
I see.
And
maybe panic or shock?
I think so. You know, the driver has never apologized or acknowledged. Mm. So that is really been salt in the wounds for me.
Sure.
However, I didn't in the beginning, and even I don't feel ill will because it wasn't on purpose.
Right.
But I think her actions or lack of apology or empathy has been really tough, you know, to navigate. Yeah. For my husband, from that very moment, though, there was more, I don't know if I want to use the word anger, but frustration and sadness, you know, when the driver, so he was watching, there were other people watching, all screaming, you know, just stop driving. And when she finally stopped, the driver was almost like a toddler having a tantrum, just screaming. And I remember my husband saying to her, "Don't you even care what you've done?"
Right.
She had no interest in, you know, my state. And he is such a caring person that all, you know, he was thinking about me, but thinking about how can she not even care about me?
Right. Right. I mean, where's the, just the,
where's humanity?
Basic. Yeah. Humanity, compassion, right. For your fellow human there. And
that was very hard for him.
Yeah.
I think it was hard for a lot of the people that were there in the moment.
Yeah. No, I got you. I got you. Yeah, it would have to be. I mean, that's very, very tough to even imagine, much less see in real life happening before your eyes. So a couple things I wanted to kind of touch on this as we go down this journey, Nassim, and then we'll talk about your transformation as well, is you mentioned that hearing your husband and his screams during this happening, it was one of the things that kind of kept you alive, right? Were there any thoughts after the first hit that differed from the second, that differed from the third? And then, you know, at the point when you're trapped, then, you know, I don't know. I would think as a husband, I would say, please don't move. Please don't move. Please don't move. You're just trapped. And when you're trapped, you don't want the driver to move at all, reverse, forward, or nothing. Right. I mean, did your feelings start to change or thoughts start to change?
I mean, in those moments, as I'm sure people have said before me, everything is in slow motion.
Yeah.
So I vividly, and I was conscious throughout the event, remember, you know, having so many conversations with myself. It actually started the first time she hit me, because when she first hit me, I was standing. Mm-hmm. And I had been having a fantastic day.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, wow, you're hitting me on this day where I'm having this fabulous day.
Yeah.
But I was still standing. You know, my husband wasn't panicked at that time. I wasn't panicked. I mean, it wasn't great that a car hit me, but I was okay.
Right, right.
And it was when she drove over me that I started screaming. He started screaming.
Yeah.
But that, you know, those first screams were like, oh, like, what is going on? This car is running over me.
Right.
And, you know, I was trying to wiggle around, trying to get out from underneath it.
Yeah.
But it was when she drove over me the second time that, you know, I could hear my husband's screams change.
Yeah.
And I could sense that something was really wrong in this moment. You know, it was the second time she drove over me that I thought, wow, I'm not getting out of this. you know, because I could hear it in my husband's screams and the screams of the other people there.
Right.
And that's when I really reflected on life, on, you know, my three kids, you know, just had those near death moments, which I'm actually quite grateful to have experienced and still have life runway ahead of me.
Yeah.
But it was a very distinct journey in each of those phases, as you noted. And then when the car drove over me a third time, it actually jogged me back to the moment that I was in.
Yeah.
And interestingly, when it brought me back that third time, I had reflected on my life. I had, you know, kind of come to terms with the fact that I wasn't going to make it. Mm-hmm. And that third time I was actually just felt tired.
Yeah.
And done, you know, because the car had driven over me three times. I had the tires go over me five times. Oh, the tires even went over my head and my neck.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was interesting because I wasn't feeling pain.
Right.
In that moment, I was so lost in my thoughts.
Yeah.
But then when the car stopped, all of the pain started rushing in.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that. Oh, what an experience. My goodness. So, okay. At some point then, when she stopped that third time and you felt all the pain come through, at some point, obviously EMS and emergency units are called. You are taken to the hospital. Can you kind of just kind of walk us through that?
Absolutely. So when the car finally stopped and I was pinned underneath the car, as you noted, because we were on a hill, the police and the ambulance and everyone had to put airbags underneath the tires. So I was actually under the car for probably about, you know, 12 minutes or so.
Oh, my.
And it was actually interesting, the, you know, the experience and the variety of thoughts I had in that moment. So I went from, you know, first just the pain at hearing my husband's voice, not knowing, you know, neither of us had any idea whether I was going to survive. I mean, I was alive, but I couldn't move my body. You know, I could wiggle my fingers.
Yeah.
My face felt like it had been ripped off. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, I wasn't paralyzed, but I was paralyzed. I couldn't move.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I remember after those initial moments that, you know, the me that is so used to juggling work and the kids and running everything returned. And I started saying, you know, honey, did you get my purse? Did you get my iPhone? And started worrying about all of those, you know, day-to-day things.
Right.
And then finally, you know, when they did take the car off me and they longboarded me and, you know, put me in the ambulance, took me to the hospital.
Yeah.
There was about an hour and a half where they were doing all the tests. And I think that was actually probably the hardest 90 minutes of my husband's life and my kid's life. Okay. Because at that point they knew I was run over three times.
Yeah.
And they had no information as to what state I was in.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was really hard. I mean,
the element of uncertainty can really take us for a ride in speculation, right?
Yeah,
and though a lot of us don't like to speculate, especially if we're put on the spot and we're asked the question, "Is she going to survive? What's wrong with her?" As a loved one, we can't help but speculate because it's our mind's way of telling us we want some certainty, you know? Yeah,
I know. And, you know, interesting you brought that up. So my kids at the time, my daughter was 13 and my two sons were 11 and 9. Mm-hmm. And my daughter just stepped up and, you know, all of a sudden had to take control of so many things, you know, too many things for a 13-year-old. And one of the things that was happening is my sons were saying to her, you know, is life ever going to be the same? You know, she was putting them to bed at night. Yeah. And she had to say yes, even though she had no idea.
No idea.
Well, no, it was a lot on her.
Wow. 13. Bless her heart.
I know.
Yeah. She, but it seems like she grabbed ownership of it. To toe the line, so to speak, and contribute as a family member, knowing these things with life in our family must continue. Although we love our mother dearly, we miss our mother dearly. We hope she comes back very, very much so. But again, like you said, having no idea at the time, yeah. I mean, nor did the doctors, right? So that's an awful lot for a 13-year-old to go through. And that's some quick maturing and growing up, without a doubt. So during the physical recovery, okay, knowing that that was extremely long and hard and painful, tell us about how your recovery was mentally, you know, navigating through the trauma, self-doubt, confusion, anger, just a myriad of feelings, I would imagine, and maybe even some nocturnal images in your head, you know, of the event, you know, just
some. You were spot on. The physical, the mental was much harder to deal with than the physical. Mm-hmm. You know, so I miraculously did not break any bones.
Wow.
I know. So because no bones were broken, I mean, my face, I had to have stitches all over my face. I had surgery on my eye.
Right.
You know, my body was bruised, lots of internal injuries.
Sure.
But because no bones were broken, they actually didn't admit me into the hospital. So 24 hours, less than 24 hours later, I was at home. And I say that nothing was broken, but I was completely broken. You know, yeah. I couldn't walk. I couldn't see. I couldn't move. I couldn't bear light. I couldn't think. Like, I just was, you know, as we, you know, said a minute ago, like, mom was gone. Mom might have been physically there, but, you know, she was also, you know, I was gone. And the physical parts, it wasn't easy, but we were able to navigate, you know, doctors and, you know, physical therapy at home and start to figure out how to mend some of those things.
Yes.
Although even that was, there's no playbook, and, you know, things would just pop up. Like, one day I would be worried. I would worry about what would cause the most pain that day.
Right.
And we were figuring things out even for years. But the mental was really very, very difficult because I pride myself on being a positive person, you know, being able to solve problems. You know, I've always thought I can think my way out of everything. You know, I have two master's degrees, you know, I work hard, I have a good mind, and I can think my way out of it. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't think my way out of this. You know, I couldn't, you know, my operating system had changed. My mind, I couldn't do simple things, Aubrey. You know, I remember my husband, he stayed home for the first couple of weeks. And, you know, I sent him back to work and thought that I could navigate. But I remember he asked me to fill out a camp form for my 9-year-old. That's like, name, you know, tell me about your kid.
Yeah.
I laid in bed for hours and cried because I was afraid to do it. You know, those things that I could never have imagined or predicted. And it took me a long time. I actually still am not good at it. I still have some kind of panic attack when it comes to filling out forms. I can't, I don't listen to voicemail. You know, the whole way I think and manage chaos or, you know, multitasking has changed. And, you know, accepting that, or even in the beginning recognizing that, was not something I was willing to do. You know, I kept trying to figure out, how do I problem solve my way out of this?
Right.
And, you know, there's no playbook for these kinds of moments.
No, there certainly isn't. Right. And to me, with the recovery that you were going through, Nassim, from the mental or psychological aspect, I think there were maybe two varying degrees of the mental struggle. Obviously, there's the mental struggle of of following this regimen of recovery and therapy exercises, and following that each day so you can walk, you can have and recovered motor skills and things like that. And so just trying to, you know, get through that to function, that's just like, I don't know, kind of following doctor's orders on what's prescribed to do for the physical motion skills. So there's a mental aspect in having to drill yourself to do that each day. And then there's the second mental aspect of just the fact that you are limited, just the fact that the condition that you're in now is in contrast of the persona that that you carry through of yourself before this event, and realizing in that moment in time that you're not able to carry through that persona of being the multitasker, being the solver, right? And doing multiple things at once and figuring out very complex situations and problems.
And you bring up a very good point there is the person that I was before, you know, in addition to being the multitasker, was also a person that didn't show or ask for help. And, you know, as you know, when these things happen, people want to help. You know, they wanted to drive my kids and bring me dinners and support me. Yes. And I was so uncomfortable with that, Aubrey. It felt like they were, you know, it made me feel weak.
Yes.
And I didn't know how to accept any help. But then a couple of really interesting things happened. You know, one, very tragic, my brother lost his dog. Oh. Now, he loved his dog very much, and I love my brother very much. Yes. And so when I saw him in pain, even though I couldn't open my eyes or even pick up the phone to call him or do anything, I felt like he's in pain and I want to help him.
Yes.
And that happening so close to my accident helped me realize that just like I wanted to help him, people needed to help me. It didn't just happen to me.
Right.
It happened to everyone that loved me.
Yes. You know,
it happened to my family. It happened to my friends. And they needed some way to participate in the healing. You know, they needed to take something, they needed to do something active.
Yes.
And I did not, it was very hard for me to know how to let them, you know, without feeling weak or like a victim.
Right.
The second thing that happened and that really helped me reframe that, how I spoke about my journey and my accident at that time. I started seeing a trauma therapist who taught me about the art and philosophy of kintsugi, where you take a broken piece of pottery and you put it back together with a gold inlay, celebrating the cracks in the piece, celebrating the journey of the piece.
Yes.
I really latched onto that because I thought, you know, my accident is now part of my journey. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to mean that I'm a victim.
Right. Exactly.
And I was able to, once I grasped that concept and the strength that that offered me, I started sharing my journey, not as a victim, but as this is what's happened.
Right.
This is where I am in the journey, and learned that as I shared where I was in the journey, I could then share my progress in the journey.
Yes.
And it also opened up the conversation for other people to share things that were going on in their lives. And as you know, everybody's got something going on.
They sure do. They sure do. I mean, we all do, right?
We all do.
Yeah. Yeah. There are several virtues that I've heard in what you just shared with us, Nassim. One of those is transparency. So, you know, I really appreciate you sharing the fact that you have become transparent in using this story to share to others for inspiration and to drive home the fact that you're not a victim, nor are you viewing yourself as one, right? I mean, just a whole reframed way of thinking. It's a mindset shift. The second virtue that I heard you mentioned, or at least that kind of resounded to me as you were explaining this, is vulnerability. And so I want to, speaking of vulnerability, I wanted to run this by you, okay? Because on your website, there was something that I read from you that kind of it really resonated with me. And I'd love if you can share, for the benefit of the listeners, some insight on this in retrospect, okay? Because in your whole journey, it seems like you have really taken an introspective look at what you've gone through and what you knew of yourself before the event, during the event, and now after the event in recovery, all for reflection and growth. So here's what I read, and it really resounded with me. I just want to see what your take is on this. So this was in an area on your website called Vulnerability Trumps Fabulous. And so, you know, initially you mentioned waking up that morning feeling fabulous, you know, strong, and always having the ability, like you said, to make tough things look easy. Now, you later mentioned, you know, after the event in your physical recovery, the dismantling of the fabulous facade that you so carefully constructed, you know. Now, having said that, you know, I personally, I can't help but feel that you at some point discovered strength in your journey, in that vulnerability. And in hindsight of it all, you know, basically, I want to ask you, what is your assessment on your idea of fabulous as you look in hindsight?
Well, you know, so I now think of vulnerability as a dimension of strength.
Okay, wonderful.
You know, that transparency and vulnerability is not necessarily just about us,
right?
But it's about being strong enough to understand and recognize that people need to be part of our journey.
Yes, yes.
And that is a dimension of strength that I think we so often don't think about or haven't realized, mm-hmm. haven't, you know, accepted. And right. I have found that once I realized that the transparency and the vulnerability is not just for me, but it's for, you know, for other people as well, yeah. It allowed me to then, you know, it allowed me to have deeper, closer relationships.
Yeah.
You know, because when I just show the, you know, the facade of fabulous, where I'm juggling everything, and it's never that I meant it to be a facade, you know, it's just what I knew in how I projected strength and competence was juggling it all, not asking for help, being the helper.
Yeah.
But what I was missing was the connection that vulnerability enables. Because when you're going through hard things, it's like social media. Yeah. You know, when you see people on social media and everything is fabulous, you feel a distance with them. Well, they're just living fabulous. How do they understand me?
Right.
How do they connect with me?
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, why are they lucky and I'm not, you know? But once you start sharing, you know, more transparent, you know, living your life with more transparency, you allow people in and to relate. And that was such a gift for me, you know, to realize that just by being more honest about who I was and where my journey was and, you know, how I was navigating those, you know, tough things.
Yeah.
You know, I still feel like my life is fabulous.
Well, of course, yes.
But it's more honest and my relationships are better. And so when I say, you know, vulnerability trumps fabulous, it's about opening up yourself.
Right. Yeah. No, I completely see that, you know, and you are opening yourself and not saying that before the event you were any less authentic or less genuine. Or any less humble, you know. I mean, I feel you're true and true authentic throughout, even before this happened. But was there there's some element of where I don't know, you almost kind of debunked fabulousness, and where it now takes a back seat, and vulnerability takes a front seat to open yourself up more. I mean,
yeah, there was actually, so there was a journey and also a moment. So, you know, through the recovery, just the sharing that I talked about, and then people sharing back, and the celebration of the incremental wins and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was, you know, I could feel the value of that.
Yeah.
Then something else happened that really, shined a light on that, you know, that facade of fabulousness. Somebody said to me, you know, you were, I didn't really like you much. You were an unsympathetic character. Mm. And it really that really opened up my eyes to, you know, it's not that, I mean, I didn't think I was so different before the accident.
Right.
I just wasn't showing it. I just wasn't sharing it.
Right.
And that simple change has been so meaningful in the depth of conversations and relationships, not just with, you know, my close friends, but with people around me, you know, sometimes people in line for coffee or, you know, at a soccer game, just sharing and being able to laugh at, you know, sometimes what maybe is making your day hard, but can still be ridiculous and, you know, shareable.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, and being, again, transparent and vulnerable enough to laugh at ourselves and not take ourselves so seriously, you know, when something goofy happens and like the point I was trying to make before, you know, it's not that you were any less humble or less genuine or less authentic before all this happened, but, and thank you for clarifying it. You articulated it so gracefully. You just didn't reveal it, show it, you know? And now with a almost a whole new rediscovered perspective, you know, on life, on interacting with others, on just how you perceive things, just in your everyday, you know, observations, things that you're doing and conversations that you're having is speaking volumes to those around you now, it seems like, you know? And can you remind us once again, you said there were two things that kind of turned things around for you as far as helping or as far as wanting to help your brother.
Yes.
And the problem and the
other one,
Kintsugi. I'm sorry, what was that again?
Kintsugi?
Kintsugi, okay.
Kintsugi. So it's the philosophy and the art of taking a broken piece of pottery and putting it back together with the gold inlay. Those two things were, you know, I said there was no playbook.
Yeah.
Those two things helped me have a framework of how to move forward.
Yes, you know, nice.
Accept my, you know, my accident as part of my journey, and recognize there's a strength in that sharing and showing I need help is about me and other people. Because sometimes it's hard to just feel like it's a, you know, and maybe I do that, you know, to protect my own ego, you know, because sometimes feeling like you need help can feel, make you feel a little insecure. But when you're a person that normally is in control, recognizing that it's also about someone else makes it a little easier to accept and navigate.
Oh, completely. Right. I mean, because when, to me, help and trust goes hand in hand. So when you need help, you know, you need, I mean, it really pays to be around loved ones that you can trust who genuinely want to help, you know, giving them that opportunity to help because they care for you so much, because to your point, there's a degree of process that they have to go through in how this event has impacted them that, you know, they need to express it somehow. And so you're giving them that opportunity by realizing this, that it's not just happening to me, it's happening to my loved ones as well. Yeah. And they're here to help me just as I would help them, just as I want to help my brother in the passing of his dog, of his pet.
Yeah. You're letting them actively participate in the journey.
100%. And again, that also speaks volumes to your loved ones as well, for sure. So Nassim, when others, people you've talked to in different keynotes and any public speaking events that you've had, you know, maybe even book signings, when you're talking with other people who find themselves, let's say, in the throes of trauma, pain, despair, you know, I mean, it can be so seemingly insurmountable that they can't see the forest for the trees. They're just really, really immersed in this despair because it's right in front of them, right? Yeah. So how, what type of guidance or maybe insight would you share with someone going through this in the present moment to where they can look beyond the trees to find calm and resolve?
You know, I'm going to be honest, you know, these moments are hard.
Yeah.
You can't magically make them easy, but there are things that you can remember that I believe will give you hope and energy to move forward. You know, one of those things is realizing you own your own story, you own your narrative. Yes. Like, we decided to make the day of my accident, May 21st, a holiday.
Yes.
An unbreakable day.
That's right. And
that, you know, we were taking the ownership back of that day. It wasn't the day I almost died.
Right.
It's the day I survived. Yep. Just switching the way we speak about that moment has, you know, it's such power.
Yes.
And how we think about it. So all of a sudden it's become a happy thing. I survived.
Yes.
You know, the other thing that I think is really important is to not, when you're going through a tough moment, don't expect to go from life is tough to everything's perfect or like
right. It used to be. Yes.
Recognize and celebrate and share those incremental steps. You know, once I started sharing my journey again, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm like, let's use the Kintsugi mindset of not a victim, but this is what I'm going through.
Yes.
I was able to share those, what I call them, like the little wins or the milestones. Mm-hmm. You know, once I could tell my friends that, or, you know, tell people that I'm not climbing the stairs, or that, you know, I can't stand my arm, you know, my nerve damage is so bad that I can't hold a coffee cup.
Yeah.
You don't know those things about me. When I text you and say, I'm holding a coffee cup, you know, why is she texting me that? Like, what's the big deal? You know where I started my journey.
Yes.
And you can celebrate that milestone. It brings energy and it gives people hope. Like, it gave my kids hope that things were moving forward.
Yes, yes. And who else can appreciate that other than those who have been on the journey with you?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also promotes, this is a mantra that I kind of picked up for myself at the start of 2025. Okay. And I'm trying to live by this mantra, and I'm going to try to do it for the rest of my days, but it's simply put, be present, be intentional. And it puts you in the present moment of the journey, whether it's a struggle or a win, and it allows you to enjoy and or suffer and process whatever it is you're going through at the present moment to appreciate the milestones, right? To appreciate the wins, as you mentioned in the Kintsugi method, and your children and your other loved ones are enjoying and appreciating that as well, you know, because they are going through it with you.
And what you realize too is that people, you know, sometimes people need a proxy, you know, for their own, you know, for their own milestones that they hope to achieve. And maybe they're not where they want to be, but remembering and seeing other people go through tough things and watching them navigate helps you realize that, you know, that you can get through tough things.
Right.
You know, there is a happy story. It takes a little work, but that's possible. And just knowing it's possible is a really big deal in those tough times.
No, it truly is. And, you know, in the people that you've encountered, and I'm talking, this is extending beyond your nucleus of loved ones who have gone with you through this journey. But in those that you have shared your story with, you know, who knows the countless number of people that you may have planted that seed to anything that they are suffering or going through, any struggle that they're suffering and going through, after meeting you, feeling your energy, hearing your story, and seeing how you are today compared to what you've shared with them or what they've experienced with you, if you know, for a loved one, they better appreciate where you are today, and I think it's a seed planted in them to transform themselves from whatever struggle they're going through.
Hopefully. I mean, that's why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if there's something that I can share to help pay it forward, you know, I wanted to, you know, it's like writing a memoir and sharing everything about your life.
Yes.
Not for my intention, but yeah. I do hope it's helped some people. I think one of the things that I often hear is just recognizing that, you know, sometimes in these traumas, there are demarcation points and you may never be the person that you were before the trauma.
Right.
But that's okay. Yeah. You don't have to be.
Right. Right. And there's that's a point of assurance that you are establishing and proclaiming. You know, you don't have to be the same person. In fact, I don't know if there's much expectation after such a traumatic event and surviving a traumatic event to be the same person. I mean, and you know, whether it's for the worse or for the better, I mean, that's a higher power, you know, that goes through that. I can't speak to that, but you know, in how you reflect in what you've gone through and what you've learned, you know, I mean, you're so grounded and you know, just willing to open yourself up for the benefit of helping others, inspiring others. I must commend you, Nassim, for just the great work that you're doing. And I know you and I in this conversation, we just scratched the surface of the great stuff that you have been doing and helping other people in the points of realization that you've had within your introspection in going through this. And then the things that you've learned, you've applied, because it's so obvious, because like you said, you know, someone mentioned to you, I thought you were such a distant person before, or whatever they said. You know, I mean, that's an unsolicited observation that they shared with you that can make you stop and think, okay, was I that way? I don't think so. And like you said, you just didn't reveal it. You didn't show it. You know, I mean, it doesn't mean you weren't humble. Doesn't mean you weren't authentic. I mean, you were all those things. So with that said, Nassim, in maybe a short sentence of 5 words or less, maybe, can you answer for me and for the listeners, what is Nassim Rochette's identity today?
Oh, wow. I would say joy seeker.
Joy seeker. I love joy that. Seeker. I love
and
that.
Reframer.
And reframer. Wonderful.
That's it. You know, I'm simple. I want to live, you know, I live with joy. I pursue joy, you know, in all parts, you know, of my life. And I believe in the power of our words and how we choose our narrative and how we deal with people and, you know, spreading a positive energy.
Doesn't mean
everything's perfect all the time, but it means that we try hard to bring good energy.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, this t-shirt, I don't even know who said it, but there's a quote on it, you know, we rise by lifting others. And I
100%. Yes, I agree. I mean, I usually go by a similar phrase that says a rising tide raises all ships, but it's the same applies, right? And so having the intention for joy, the intention for living in the present moment, the intention just to be happy, right? The simplest things in life can just manifest in us a wonderful, energetic, happy, fulfilled existence while we're here in this short time on earth, right? That is absolutely wonderful to hear, Nassim. And for one of my last questions here, if you could answer in a few words, what makes Nassim Rochette unbreakable?
I think it's recognizing that breaking doesn't mean you're broken.
Recognizing the breaking doesn't mean you're broken. Yeah. Makes you unbreakable.
Absolutely. We all go through stuff.
Yes.
But, you know, we all go through it and then we navigate it.
Yes.
We know we're not, you know, it's not the end.
Yes. Hey, that makes sense. It makes complete sense. Me, myself, I have to kind of stop and think about it, but I'm past that now. It makes sense. But for the listener's benefit, I just want to share with you, okay, the ability to recognize that, you know, if you're broke, if you break, that doesn't mean you're broken.
Right.
Having the ability to recognize that can make you unbreakable.
Yes.
The ability to recognize that. So for
it's back to the kintsugi, you know.
Appreciate
the journey.
Yes, appreciate the journey. Not playing the victim. You are not broken. We're all human. There are things that happen to us which may appear to break us, but that doesn't mean we're broken. And that's the message that Nassim is sharing with us this evening in her story, in her book. Nassim Rochette, it's such a pleasure having you on the show. How can the listeners follow you and connect with you and learn more about your great work and pick up a copy of your book?
Yeah. So the book is available on Amazon or I guess wherever you buy books, and you can buy a, you know, the paperback or hardcover or Kindle, but you can also, if you want to do the Audible, I narrate it.
Oh, audiobook. Nice.
And then you can find me at NassimRochette.com, but if you don't remember that because it's not an easy name, LifeUnbreakable.com.
Wonderful. We will put both website addresses in the episode show notes. We will also put a link to the Amazon link to the book in the episode show notes. This has been a lovely conversation, and you have really shared with us some incredible insights after having gone through such an unthinkable, tragic event. Nassim Rochette, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We really, really appreciate you opening yourself up, sharing your story with us, giving great insight for the listeners. And I hope we can stay in touch and maybe bring you on the show at a future date.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Aubrey. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's our pleasure. We reciprocate. And for all of you, I want to thank you all for tuning in and listening. And look, you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, we're never alone. Hope is always around the corner. And I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, someone you love, who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. And when it all comes down to it, we're all just roadies on this journey of life. But it feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have. The Road to Rediscovery is an AJ Shark production.